Thanks, Isabel. And it's good to be able to share some thoughts on those words. And as Isabel said at the beginning of our service, today we're continuing to reflect on this wonderful blessing of having our identity linked to that of Jesus Christ. And today we're thinking about what that means in terms of our status. And it follows on from what Will Hunt was sharing last week about our standing in Christ, where he reminded us that once we've given ourselves to Jesus, and I love that image that John pictured up for us, that idea of giving ourselves to Jesus. Once we've done that, our position in creation is no longer in question. And Will reminded us that our standing is perfect before God, even if our condition at any particular time might not be. And Paul speaks about the implications of that, one of the implications of that, in the first of the two passages that Angela read. It's laid out clearly in verse 1. That because of being in Christ, there is no condemnation. Incidentally, I was sharing some thoughts on this passage a few weeks ago here on the 12th of December. And there we looked at what Paul said, what Paul meant in the next few verses when he's speaking about two different laws and why God sent his son into the world to deal with the problem of sin. I'm not going to cover that ground again this morning. If you want to explore that further, the video of my talk's on YouTube, it's on our website. But what we are going to do is we're going to look at this wonderful statement about there being no condemnation. Human nature being what it is, I expect that most of us can think of times in the not too distant past where we did something, where we said something, where we thought something that, reflecting on it afterwards, we know was wrong, not the best thing we could have done. And there will be times when people come up to us and say that something we have done was unhelpful, was unkind, was damaging in some way. We may recognize that. We may think we're being misjudged. We've seen it acted out on a public stage over the last few weeks in Parliament, as questions have been raised and explored in great detail about events that took place in Downing Street during lockdown. And these things happen in families, in work situations, in churches, in schools, and elsewhere. It's part of life, and something we need to engage with and respond to. And the way we raise these issues, the way we respond to them, can make a real difference as to how they are resolved. But sometimes these things that we do take on an extra level of significance. And we start to ask questions about whether people have broken the law. And we have a provision in our legal system for this to be determined, which can result in someone being found criminally guilty of something and sentenced to some sort of penalty. They've been condemned of a crime. There are consequences, maybe having to pay a fine, maybe spending time in prison. And even when that sentence has been carried out, the stigma associated with it can stay with us as we have that act and the associated judgment on our record forever. It can affect how people see us. It can impact opportunities for employment. That reminds me of a time when I was working in the IT industry, and a colleague and I were interviewing somebody who had applied for a job. And we'd spent, 40 minutes talking to him, and we said, that's all very good, but we just want to pick up on one of the details on your CV, because he'd listed his employment record, and there was a gap of 6 months. And we said, what was going on there? He said, well, my mother was very ill, and I took time off work to care for her. And we said, okay, and we carried on with the rest of the interview. Afterwards, we were speaking to somebody who happened to know him and said, did he talk about those 6 months? I said, well, yes. He said, and it transpired that it's actually those 6 months he'd been in prison. And he chose not to say anything about it because of his concern for what that would mean for his employment opportunities. These things can have real impact on life, on our family, on our friends, how people think of us. And I expect that's one of the reasons why people who have been wrongly convicted of something can put so much effort and time into getting that conviction overturned and being removed from their record. And when that happens, in the view of the legal system in our country, in the view of society, it is as though they were never found guilty of whatever they were accused of. They are without condemnation. And having that confirmed within society must be really important and releasing. How much more in the sight of God? Just as we do wrong things towards people, just as we make mistakes and we choose to do things that harm others, just as we break the laws of our land, in a similar way, we do not live up to the standards that God has laid out. And this results in us being found guilty of sin, condemned before him. And Paul has been exploring this earlier in the book of Romans. And there's nothing that we can do in our own strength or by our own efforts to put things right with God, even if we are able to do so within society. But the wonderful thing that happens when we take on our identity in Christ is that God now sees us in exactly the same way as he sees his son. Jesus never did anything wrong. And because of our identity in him, God now sees us in the same way. It is this that makes it possible for us to come into God's presence. It is this that makes it possible for us to have a relationship with him. Think for a moment about the relief you experience when something that has gone wrong between you and someone else is put right, where you know that there is no longer a barrier between you, that awkwardness, that tension has gone. And how much more that must be true as we're able to stand before God without any fear of condemnation at all. Just think about that for a moment. It's a simple concept, but allow it to sink deep inside you. And recognize and know that when God looks at you, there is no hint of condemnation at all, because he sees you in his son. You don't know the things I've done wrong and that make me ashamed. I don't know the things you have done, unless we've chosen to share some of them with each other. And one of the reasons we don't share these things is that we don't want people to think less of us. But God knows every detail, even the things we don't want to admit to ourselves. But yet, because of our identity in Jesus, he still looks at us without a hint of condemnation. Sometimes we can find it difficult to forgive ourselves. Sometimes we can find it difficult to let things go. Sometimes we cannot understand why God would act as though we had not done those things that we are ashamed of. And at times like that, it's important to recognize again that our identity in Jesus allows us to know that we are not condemned. Rather, we are welcomed by God into his presence. And to quote John Shackleton, great phrase at the beginning of the service, there is no need for us to live our lives shrouded in shame. A wonderful phrase. This doesn't mean that we should simply carry on with the things we know are wrong as though God is going to give us a free pass for them. Paul speaks about this earlier in the letter as well. And, you know, if a friend has forgiven us for something wrong we have done to them, then most of us would want to change our behavior so we don't hurt them again, as a recognition of their love for us and their grace towards us. How much more should we seek God's help to change how we live so that we become more and more like Jesus, whose identity we share? I expect there are some here this morning, in this building or on Zoom, who really need to hear the truth of these words of Paul. That for you, because of your faith in Jesus, you are not condemned. You need not feel condemned. Allow that to sink in, to bless, and to bring freedom and release from whatever is keeping you down. Wonderful as this is, there is more. Our status does not just affect us individually, but it does something for us as a group of people. And Paul speaks about this later in the book, where he uses the picture of a human body to communicate this idea, which is an idea that he explores further in chapter 12, which is what we read. Paul's idea is really simple, but says something really important. He points to the reality that our bodies are made up of lots of different parts. And he cites some specific examples, speaking about feet and hands and ears and eyes. And he recognizes that each one of those is really important. Each one of us, and each one enables us to do the things that we want to do. I don't know how much Paul understood the inner workings of the body, how it all comes together, how it operates. But now, with the medical advances that have been made in the last 2,000 years or so, we know an awful lot about how our bodies work. I think there's probably still a few things we don't know. We know about the vital organs we have and the things that come together to enable our bodies to work and to function. Even, for example, that there are 27 bones in our hands. That might be some knowledge for somebody. And if any one of those bones is damaged or broken, it has a real impact on how we are feeling and what we're able to do. It's a part of us. But when there's something wrong with it, it affects all of us. Some of you may know I was diagnosed with shingles just over a week ago. It resulted in a painful rash on my left arm down there. It affected my upper arm and other parts of my body. It made me feel very tired. And even though the visible evidence was just a small part on my left arm, it affected all of me. I remember visiting an elderly lady in a previous church who'd fallen and broken both of her wrists. She was in a lot of pain. Her wrists were enclosed in plaster casts. She was unable to do anything at all for herself. Distressing to see, difficult for her to cope with. The loss of functionality in her wrists affected everything about her. I remember a time when my mother, this must be about 12 years ago, had a serious sodium deficiency in her body. No bones broken, no injuries that anyone could see, but the effect it had on her was awful. She couldn't concentrate on anything. She'd forgotten how to walk. She couldn't hold a cup in her hand. So hard, so difficult to see. And we will know of people today, those who are near to us, maybe people in our families, maybe ourselves, where their bodies are not working as they should. Isabel reminded us of some of those earlier, causing problems for them and for their loved ones. Let's recognize that. Let's care for each other. Let's support each other in any way we can. Because we know that each part of our bodies is important, and when any is not functioning or is hurting, it has an impact on the whole. But when everything is working properly, when everything is working together, our bodies are wonderful things and enable us to accomplish and enjoy so much. And so when Paul uses this illustration, he's saying some really important things about what it means to be part of a community of God's people like this one. Because we are in Christ, he says, we come together to form one body. We don't have the same abilities. We don't have the same responsibilities. But we are united in one body. And each person has exactly the same status and standing as everyone else. One is not more important than another. We each bring our uniqueness and our contributions to bless and enhance the whole. As I was thinking about this, I realized it's a slightly strange model to use. As one of the things about a human body is we know what it is made up of. Some of us know a bit more than others, but you know what I mean. We know that unless something has gone wrong, a body has two hands, two feet, a nose, and so on. The only things that tend to change are things like the number of teeth, the amount of hair, and things that get removed during operations. Now, having a third hand might enable us to do some interesting things. It would seem rather strange and odd. But the church is not constrained in that way, being able to flex and grow and shrink depending on the people who are part of it at any particular time. new people can join us with very similar gifts to those who are already present in the church, and they can add to that capability. Or people can join us with gifts and abilities that we don't currently have, enabling us to grow into new areas of discipleship and ministry and mission. It's one of the exciting things of being part of a dynamic group of people who are united together in Jesus. And Paul recognizes the reality of this, where it speaks about each of us having different gifts and abilities and encourages us to use those gifts to the best of our ability with a glad and willing spirit. We should not look at others and long for the gifts that they have and neglect the things that God has given to us and the contributions that only we can make. And I remember times in my life when I got this seriously wrong, and I would look at someone else and long for the ability to do the sort of things they were doing in the way that they were doing them. What Paul is encouraging us here is to recognize the gifting that God has given, to receive it and to value it and to use it to bless the church community and to give honor to God. And if you're struggling to know what your gifting is, what you could contribute, then please do speak to someone and seek to determine what God is calling you to contribute here and what way he wants you to bring blessing to this body of his people. Paul also speaks about each member belonging to all the others. And it's easy to understand this when we think about the model of a body. My toes are part of the same body as my fingers. They belong together. I could not remove my toes and give them to someone else. At least, I guess, not without some clever surgery taking place. But what does this mean when we think about a community of people? In what way do we belong to each other? There are a lot of ways we could think about this, but I think the basic idea is that we all depend on each other, and we are not expected to work out what it means to follow Jesus on our own. If one of us chooses to step back and to no longer exercise the gift that God has given us, then we are all the weaker. And I know there are times and a variety of reasons when we need to step back for a time, and that needs to be recognized and understood, and we need to support each other in that. But if we are each in a mutual body relationship, then surely the default position should be that we are engaged and we are supporting, we are contributing to what the body as a whole is seeking to do, to what God is calling his people to engage in. Because if not all the members of the body are functioning, then the body itself is not able to function properly. And incidentally, this is one of the reasons we want to encourage people to meet up in the building wherever possible and when they feel safe to do so, as opposed to online. We have many more opportunities to engage with each other, to support each other, to encourage each other when we meet together in person. Now, I know, as we continue to emerge from COVID, that timing is important, and I'm not suggesting that people should feel under any pressure to be in the building if they don't feel safe meeting in groups of people. And I know that some are physically unable to gather in a building like this, however much they would long to do so. And it's great to have the ability to connect with them online and something that's important to continue with. But if you are able and feel safe to do so, or when you feel safe to do so, please do make that choice to gather with us in the building and to take advantage of the additional opportunities that provides to be body together. Just as our status of no condemnation in Christ does not mean that we should continue to do those things that displeases God, so our status as members of one body should not mean that we sit back and allow others to do what needs to be done, but rather to have that deep desire to experience the privilege of working with others, using the gifts that God has given us in order to bring blessing to us all and to see God's kingdom grow. What Paul is communicating here is that the standing that we have in Jesus means life and hope and blessing for us each as individuals. The standing we have in Jesus means that we have the privilege of being a valuable part of a group of people, this group of people, each one with that same individual status in Christ. each one who can say that in God's sight they are not condemned. And each one working together to bless and encourage each other and to invite others to come to know Jesus as well. Let's rejoice in who we are. Let's live out the reality of it together.